This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Steve Scheer. Colson Whitehead is a writer and a MacArthur Genius Award winner. His novels include Sag Harbor and Zone One.
He's also a poker player. His latest book is a work of nonfiction, The Noble Hustle, Poker, Beef Jerky, and Death. Whitehead has been a casual poker player, home games with friends, but then editors at the long-form sports website Grantland offered to pony up the $10,000 entry fee so he could play in the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas on the condition that he write about it. It was an offer that Colson Whitehead could not refuse. He told David Hyde how he prepared for the poker competition.
I started getting poker books to study more seriously, and I was reading the wrong ones because a tournament poker is not home game poker. There's different rules and betting conventions, and I started to get really scared, and I was realizing that my amazing trip was going to be sort of eat, pray, love for depressed shut-ins. I was not really prepared.
So what did you do?
I tried to approach it scientifically. I got a poker coach. A friend of a friend had been to the World Series of Poker the last couple years. A woman named Helen Ellis, who writes young adult fiction and plays poker on the side, and she became my guru, teaching me where to play in Atlantic City, how to play in tournaments, how to comport myself. I got a physical trainer. You know, people think that you sit down at a poker table, it's pretty easy, but you're actually there for 12 hours at the World Series, and you burn a lot of calories. So it seemed just to make sense to have someone to teach me about posture. And my physical trainer, Kim Albano, taught me some elementary yoga posture so I could stay limber at the table, some breathing exercises to keep my head together when I was freaking out. You know, the type of things you usually do when you train for something. Get your head right and your body right.
Colson Whitehead is with us. His latest book is The Noble Hustle, Poker, Beef Jerky, and Death. Speaking of training, why beef jerky?
Beef jerky, of course. It's a low-calorie, very portable snack. On my first visit to Las Vegas in 1991, I came across a store called the House of Jerkies. All they sold was jerky, Alaskan salmon jerky, beef jerky, ostrich jerky, and it seemed like a weird establishment to have. And I carried the proprietor's card in my wallet for 10 years. Coincidentally, when the World Series of Poker became big money, being shown ESPN, a billion-dollar business, Jack Link's beef jerky became their main sponsor. You know, the World Series is actually subtitled Jack Link's Beef Jerky Presents the World Series of Poker. And so it seemed that beef jerky, humble meat snack, would be a way to talk about the corporatization of Vegas, the commercialization of poker itself, and also just, you know, fine nutrition at the poker table.
And the World Series of Poker obviously takes place in Las Vegas, and you write in the book that you pity people who have never been to Vegas. You seem to have kind of mixed feelings about it. I mean, what's your take on Las Vegas and American culture, I guess?
Well, you know, the first time I went, you know, I was from New York, kind of snobby, and thought I'd be sneering at the kitschy, campy Las Vegas atmosphere. Then, of course, I dropped a nickel in a one-armed bandit and won 10 bucks and was converted. You know, Las Vegas is not there to destroy you. They want you to come back. You know, if they bankrupt you, you don't come back next year and redeem your reward cards. So it's really sort of up to you, you know, to choose ruin or just diversion. And I think it's nice that we have a place where we can go for 48 hours every couple years and escape the sort of petty tyranny of our everyday. And, you know, in the last 25 years I've been going, it's just gotten sort of bigger and better and more refined in its amusement. So it's not for everyone, but I definitely, I'm not being ironic when I say I love the place.
So, you're sort of taking this stance as the literary novelist or the intellectual from New York who's actually embracing aspects of American culture that intellectuals don't typically embrace.
Well,
am I getting that right?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of satire in my books, but I think I'm always implicated whenever I'm talking about, you know, sort of yuppie lifestyles or gentrification or our passion for gourmet coffees. You know, I make fun of those sort of types in my books, but I'm definitely implicated. And in terms of, you know, stereotypes of people who go to Vegas or gamble, coming from a home game, I was intimidated by these crusty characters. And then going to the World Series and playing with them and sweating with them and being beat by them and beating them, you know, they're just normal people. You know, they have jobs. They left their work on vacation to come out to Las Vegas to play in a World Series. They got a hotel room, and none of them want to go out, you know, the first hand or first hour. And they have their poker faces, but beneath that, they're just sort of scared, normal Joes who don't want to go out too early.
Colson Whitehead is a novelist. His books include Sag Harbor and Zone One, and his latest book is nonfiction. It's called The Noble Hustle, Poker, Beef Jerky, and Death. Why noble? What's noble about poker and noble about the noble hustle?
Well, I think, you know, we're all engaged in our little sort of contest with the world, whether we're writers or gamblers or teachers. We're all waiting for a sort of good hand, you know, to take the pain away. Come from the outside and seeing these gamblers and having, you know, a preconceived notion about who they are. I admired their belief in luck, in their hope that the next hand, the next round is the one that's going to reverse their fortunes. And they are sort of, you know, these, you know, they're spending 9 months on the circuit, traveling up and down the coast, across country, trying to make their entrance fee to the World Series of Poker. And they're working and they're hopeful. And I came to admire that.
What about beyond the professional poker players? There's all these amateur, semi-amateurs, I don't know what you want to call them, but there's a bunch of folks that pony up the $10,000 just for the thrill of playing. I don't know how many there are exactly, but what about them? What kind of types did you encounter, and do you identify with them?
Well, you know, the year I played, there were almost 7,000 people. When the game started in 1970, Benny Binion invited the best gamblers he knew. So that was seven people. So most of my training was in, you know, cheapo tables and casinos in Atlantic City. And the types there are quite different. You know, there's sort of Big Mitch, who's your average middle-aged white guy who's in town for the weekend with his wife, who just wants to win a really big hand or two to tell people back home. There's Methy Mike, you know, the sort of harrowed guys who sort of you hate to see. They're locals. They know the dealers by name. Iggy Pop looks at them and is like, wow, you know, you've really let yourself go. You should really get a meal and bulk up. And they're always talking about a pair of jacks and how they got beat, you know, by a pair of aces last week, these raconteurs. And then the people you see the most frequently are the Robotrons, the sort of young players who were raised on televised poker when they were like 10, started playing online poker as soon as they could sort of get around the age safeguards, and who crammed, you know, 20 years of poker into a year and a half playing, you know, 10 screens at once. And they've been let loose in the casinos as the government cracked down on internet play. And you sort of recognize them by their hoodies, their sunglasses, and their earbuds. They're always like plugged into their iPhones and iPads, listening to death metal or self-help books. And they're really intense.
And at some point in the book, you have this Walt Whitman-esque quote, "I contain multitudes, most of them flawed." What's in them for you, or what do you see in them that's about you? I guess really the question is, why is poker your game too?
I've always loved cards, and I think I can relate to, I mean, I'm really cheap, so I'm not a compulsive gambler, but the idea that the next hand will save you and erase all your mistakes. You're in a kind of combat round to round with these people at your table. And can you outplay them? Can you sort of eke out a win if the, you know, the poker gods smile upon you? So I relate to that in my sort of boring middle-aged way where I'm not really sort of fighting all the time. So that's one thing. But then as a home player who got a chance to play in the World Series of Poker, it's our dream. You know, we play these low stakes every week, every month with pals, and it's an escape valve from our lives. But I realized, you know, I had been given this real gift of an assignment, and I was playing. I make fun of the Methy Mikes, but I was playing for them. You know, they would love to go. And the Robotrons, who don't have the money, they would love to go. And so we're all, as people who love cards and love poker, I wasn't just sort of cynical literary novelist playing. You know, I was playing for all the home game schlubs and the people who go to casinos all the time, you know, playing $1, $2 tables, 50 bucks here, losing, you know, 100 bucks there. I was playing for them too.
It's Colson Whitehead. He's a writer and a MacArthur Genius Award winner. His latest book is nonfiction. It's called The Noble Hustle, poker, beef jerky, and death. He spoke with David Hyde.